You know how everything seems like a good idea after you've had a few? Yeah, that's...
in my car. And I'm listening to the radio.
It's time for Dukes and Bell.
Oh, someone told me it's the Black Beverly Hills. Is that true?
Driving in Atlanta just got a whole lot more bearable.
Welcome to the party, pal.
Hi, everybody. Carl Dukes and Mike Bell. The names that mean goodness.
Say my name, you know who I am.
Carl Dukes.
I drink and I know things.
Oh, don't question my authority, things.
King Kong ain't got on me.
Sometimes you just got to call somebody, and I'm not ashamed to say it. You know,
And Mike Bell.
I'm funny how? I mean, funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you.
Hope you guess my name.
Bring a pitcher of beer every 7 minutes till somebody passes out, and then bring one every 10 minutes, right?
Get ready for the best 5 hours of your life.
Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, sir.
Don't believe me, just watch.
This is Dukes and Bell.
Brought to you by Finley Roofing. We've got you covered. Atlanta's most trusted and recommended roofer.
You know what? Why don't we start doing the stuff that other guys have done on other radio shows around the country?
No.
On Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Atlanta, what's going on? It's Dukes and Bell on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We start off every day and every hour by saying, hey, man. We are live once again, as Mike just told you. It is our residency here at Hooters up in Buford, Mall of Georgia. We continue to be up here because of Falcons training camp, guys, and we invite you to come through. We'll be here until 7 tonight, and looking forward to seeing a lot of you come through to have a nice cold Hey Man Ale, which is on tap. So, real quick, yesterday, and I'm sure Mike mentioned it as Turtle, thank you so much for stepping in. As at practice, we did our interview yesterday with who did we talk to yesterday, Mike?
It was DeMarco Helms.
DeMarco Helms, thank you. And we did our interview, and I said to Mike, I just don't feel right. I'm not feeling good. And he's like, what's going on? I said, I don't know. He said, well, you know, there's some stuff going around. Maybe you caught something. And, guys, I literally left Flowery Branch with all intentions to come here. I was driving. I told him I was going to go get some electrolytes and get some Gatorade. Dude, I'm driving, and I'm like, I'm not going to make it. I am not going to make it. So, literally, I said, hey, I'm going to the house. I'm going home. Went home and was in the fetal position for about 6 hours with stomach issues last night. And I told Chris, he was like, what'd you do? I said, nothing. I laid there. I didn't eat. Mike, I had 4 saltine crackers yesterday.
Oh, man.
Because I just was like, oh, my stomach was killing me. So I missed out on all the fun. And if you came out yesterday, sorry I didn't get a chance to see you. But I know you guys had a lot to talk about. What was the reaction to the trade with the Braves?
Everybody was kind of just underwhelmed. I mean, it's just is what it is. We're in such a weird spot. You and I, we talked about this the last 3 months. You know, the only way this team's going to do anything in the postseason is the guys who aren't hitting have to hit, and the guys who are hurt have to get unhurt. So it's Harris, it's Albies, and, you know, let's be honest, it really starts and ends with Matt Olson. Riley's looking like he's turned the corner. You know, Kelnick is what he is. We're just kind of discovering that Kelnick is kind of streaky in his own way. But, yeah, the only way you really could have swung for the fences is to take on some big salary. And I just don't think they were prepared to do that. By the way, there were lots and lots of little deals. There were no big deals made.
Sure.
I mean,
blockbusters.
Arozarena going, and we talked about Al Leiter's son going to the Yankees. You know, Estevez going to the Phillies as a closer. But there was nothing big yesterday. I mean, of course, Flaherty going from Detroit to the Dodgers. Everyone was waiting for the other shoe to drop. And, of course, the Dodgers being the Dodgers pulled the trigger. But, yeah, it's just nobody really impressed other than the Phillies, I think, did the same thing we've done in years past. They've solidified their bullpen. Phillies bullpen, they've added some pieces. They're feeling good about their bats. Meanwhile, the Yankees are beating the snot out of them for us. So that's thank you, Yankees.
Yeah, the Phillies have lost 10 of their last 14. So they are slipping.
Coming back to earth, right?
And listen, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that the Braves won't continue to be in the mix. I just don't believe these two moves put you over the top. And that is part of my issue with the Soler deal. And, again, he's going to lead off tonight, Mike. This is where he did when he came here in 21. Great. I hope he hits. Please let him hit. I hope Luke Jackson comes out of the bullpen and is great because he was our World Series year. 71 appearances. He had like a 2 ERA. He was great. But this whole notion, just because it feels good, doesn't mean it's going to work.
Yeah, some folks felt that it was just simply Alex going for, to your point, nostalgia. And it's enough to placate some of the fan base. And at the end of the day, Soler is a DH. Soler's not playing the outfield for the Giants. You have to put him in the outfield now at Truist Park. You know,
Mike, and that's a liability, by the way.
I'm not saying he's as bad as Ozuna was at the end of his time in the outfield, but Soler's a butcher in the outfield, and Ron Washington's not here to help him. You know, that's part of it. it. So, and you look, the one thing you can say is Alex did take some salary on because, you know, Soler does have a contract that, you know, you got 2 years with. So it looks like, you know, after maybe one more year of Ozuna as DH, Soler could perhaps do that role. But it just it didn't really pop. And I thought maybe we'd try to get some more pitching because we're in the same boat. We basically outlined what you and I have talked about. 21, not enough pitching. 20, and we still won the World Series. 20, not enough pitching. 22, not enough pitching. 23, meh pitching.
Meh.
And now this year you're hoping about what? That Fried comes back and he's rock solid on Friday? That Ronaldo Lopez, who's never gone this deep as far as eating innings, is going to be okay? Ian Anderson's going to come back? Didn't that sound like Soroka a little bit last year?
It does.
So, I mean, you just got to hit. This team starts hitting, it will be okay. But right now, man, it's just so damn streaky.
404-726-0929. You can hit us up on the text line as well. Follow his, follow us on social media. He's Mike Bell, ATL. I'm at Put 'Em Up. See Dukes, and the radio show is Dukes and Bell 929. Follow this radio station at 929 The Game. Also yesterday, Arthur Blank spoke. I know a lot of conversation about that, talking about Kirk Cousins being the franchise quarterback. He's our starting quarterback. I guess they're still trying to put these ideas out of people's minds that for whatever reason, at any time this season.
Right.
Unless there's a major injury,
right?
That Penix is going to see the field. The owner coming out and, you know, doubling down on this, Mike. I mean, again, wanting everybody to believe this is the direction in which we're going.
It was funny because Chris made a great point yesterday when he was filling in for you. You know, Arthur Blank goes, I don't like surprises. So you knew exactly what was going on. You know, he basically said that he's not telling these guys what to do, but yet again, he doesn't like surprises, which means Arthur said, we're never going through quarterback hell again. Okay, let's get two quarterbacks. As opposed to trusting your faith in your scouting department that Penix is ready to step up and be a starter, you double down and take money that could have gone to defense and you gave it to Cousins. Look, we're safe in the quarterback department. We've got redundancy, but to me it was I don't know, not the way I would have played it. Just trust your scouts. Yeah. Trust if you believe that Penix is going to be the man, just draft Penix.
He was also asked, and Mike and I have asked him this. You know, Mike and I have had a chance to go over to his office over there off of North Side and Paces Ferry, and we've sat with Arthur, you know, and privately, and we've sat with him, and we're on record right now. He's always said to us, he said it yesterday, I'm aware of all of these decisions, but I don't make the decisions.
Like he's not a meddler.
Correct. And Mike and I have always kind of been like, come on, Arthur, really? And he's like, no. I'm aware of everything that happens. Yes, they call me. Yes, they tell me what's going to happen. But I don't tell Terry Fontenot, don't do this. Or I don't tell our previous coach, Arthur Smith, don't do this. And we've always kind of looked at each other like, okay, I hear you, but is this true?
Well, it's funny. It's, you know, the Deshaun Watson situation. Nobody to this day in the organization wants to claim it. You know, it's like a battle plan that goes south, and no general wants to say, that was my plan, you know? You know, you go back to it.
Well, you're not taking, nobody wants to take the L.
I mean, you know, it's like Winston Churchill said it all the time. We all know that, you know, victory has 1,000. Well, my good friend Jim Mann just had a great line for talk radio. Victory has 1,000 fathers, defeat generates 1,000 phone calls.
That's right.
But in the case of the Falcons, so Terry didn't make the decision, Rich McKay didn't make the decision, so somebody just out of the blue called the Houston Texans and got in a bidding war that they couldn't win with the Browns for Deshaun Watson, which then makes us send Matt Ryan out maybe a year too early. Either way, Arthur, I think, knows what he has done, knows what he wants to do. He wants to win. He just doesn't know how.
He wants to win. I totally agree. All right, guys, we are live at Hooters, again, a Mall of Georgia location. Come on out and join us. We got a lot to chop up. And, again, coming up a little bit later on this hour, you will hear from Drake London. He was with the morning shift and you know, Mike, we've been saying the expectations for all of these guys, especially on the offensive side, the numbers have to be better. Drake London, if he's not a 1,000-yard, at least 8-touchdown guy this year, something's wrong. That's at the minimum for me. I think he's better than that. I think he could probably put up more numbers. But, again, when you got all these weapons, you know, again, is he going to be the main guy? He's going to be the main wide receiver.
Right.
But I also think the way that they want to do this is Bijan Robinson running the football.
Yeah, but Zach Robinson saying, don't forget, I got a guy in Tyler Algier. It's that balance. We brought this up yesterday. I said to Chris, how does Zach Robinson handle two really good running backs that serve a purpose the way that Shanahan handled both Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman for those 2 or 3 years when it really worked, right? Always seemed to have the hot hand. 17,
right.
You know, we brought in Sarkisian. He didn't have that same balance or have that feel for when to use those guys, like in that NFC playoff game against the Phillies that we lost, against the Eagles that we lost in Philly.
Yeah, it's a great point. So, I mean, I'm not expecting him to have 2,000 yards because of the guys that he's playing with, but it should be a big year for Drake. You're going to hear that interview coming up. Also, along the way, as we mentioned, Double A went on the steakhouse today, and you'll get a chance to hear what he had to say about the trade and where we go. I mean, hopefully we win this series today, man. I mean, you got a chance to win the series against the Brewers.
Right.
It'd be great. I don't know. Somebody said to me, Dukes, how much stock are you putting into getting Money Harris back and what he will mean to this team over the last 2 months of the season?
Right. Well, it's one thing. Money's got to come back, but he's got to hit.
He's got to hit. He's got to hit.
You know, look, we all know we need his he's not really a leadoff hitter. Soler will kind of serve that role, and that's cool. But, I mean, moving forward, you've got to – you know, if you can, like, take two out of three from the Brewers, that's pretty impressive. And then, by the way, you get the Marlins. The Marlins have sold everything.
Everybody.
Look, if you can't find a way to sweep the Marlins, that's one you got to make some hay against, certainly, right?
I agree with you on that, Mike. So, with that said, the Braves certainly top of mind right now. And again, they're only seven – going into today – 7.5 back, Mike, of the Phillies. We were 10 just a few weeks ago.
It looked like it was going to be 12 at one point, the way things were cracking that first 2 days in New York.
So, again, it's not that you're not that far off. I don't know if we can win this division. I am not confident. This is just where I'm at, guys. I'm sorry. I'm not going to sit here and sell you false hope. I'm not telling you we're going to win this division. But the idea is, if you can start hitting, you might be in the mix too.
Right, man. Like the good news is, the law of averages says the entire team cannot be this bad at hitting all season long. Now, we're never going to get back to last year's clip because that was record-breaking, franchise record-setting. But if Matt Olson can just find some stability, like imagine if Matt Olson gets back to, you know, around a 9 change OPS, and just you know, because remember they moved him in the lineup. He has Ozuna behind him. He shouldn't have to early before they moved him down in the lineup. He should be raking. Austin Riley, I think, is certainly looking the part. But you know, Arcia hit that big home run the other night in Milwaukee. Let's hope that leads to something. But you're right. If this team just does if you do three quarters of what you did at the plate last year, this team isn't going to make some noise in the playoffs.
Yeah. All right, man. Want to hear from you guys. Lots of stuff going on. We're going to talk about the Falcons today, what happened at practice, what went down. We'll get you caught up. Jimmy Lake speaking to the media. Everybody's curious about this defense, man, and what this is going to look like.
And, you know, we saw this the other day, and I didn't know who the guy was, and then D-Led dropped it today, that it's Steve Wilks. It's the former defensive coordinator for a number of teams in the NFL and in college and head coach in Arizona for 1 year. And then he was the interim coach for Carolina, and a lot of folks feel in hindsight the Tepper should have just stayed with him and brought in like a big-time offensive coordinator. Anyway, defensive genius.
Yes, he is.
Very aggressive in his blitz packages. Yeah. And how many Falcon fans over the years said, look, I'd rather die with the blitz than I die in a zone, getting just picked apart.
I felt like Steve Wilks should have got the Carolina job, Mike.
Right.
Before Frank Reich went down there and then they fired him. Steve Wilks did a hell of a job that year with little of nothing. But, yes, he is an interesting guy. All right, coming back, we're going to talk more about our general manager because he spoke on Andy and Randy today. What do you think about the general manager? Everybody's talking about the coach and the quarterback. Has he built a championship-caliber team? We'll talk about it next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Oh, man. Oh, my stomach. Hey, sir, let me get a bite. Let me get a bite. Too much hot sauce. Damn, I got to go to the bathroom.
We're going to find out pretty quickly whether or not we have a championship caliber roster. There are certain teams you look around the NFL. Chiefs, duh. Eagles, yes. You say 49ers. There are teams, Mike, you go, look at the roster, man. Look what they've done, how they built it. And everybody's kind of sitting here saying we're going to be good. And I'm not just talking about Mike and I. Mike, that's the thing around the country. Everybody's saying that Falcons going to be good. Falcons. All of a sudden now we're the talk of the town. We're the talk of the country. We've sold out our season tickets. Now everybody wants to jump on board. Oh, they're going to be good. But do we really have a championship caliber roster, and how good has our general manager been? So, Mike, his first pick was Kyle Pitts. We still don't know how good Kyle Pitts is, okay? He picked Richie Grant. This is going back to 2021. That was the first year of Terry Fontenot.
Right.
Richie Grant. Right now, Richie Grant is a question mark. I think he's shown flashes, but he's not solidified himself as a bona fide starting safety in this league. Jalen Mayfield, bum.
Bum.
Darren Hall.
Bum.
Bum. Drew Dolman.
Starting center. Value pick. Like akin to like Grady in the fifth round.
Absolutely. Taquan Graham.
Starter.
Okay.
Contributor.
So we're going back to 2021. Everybody else in the rest of that draft, including Frank Darby, loved his laugh. That was about it.
Bum.
We get to 2022. Drake London. Arnold Ebiketie. Troy Andersen. Troy Anderson, to me, has a question mark next to his name.
I mean,
we
think Drake London is going to be the star, but again, because of the quarterbacks that have been thrown to, which is also part of the general manager's responsibility, he's not been able to show out. But the other two, again, are just huge question marks. Ebikadi's a question mark. How many times do we bring him? If Ebikadi can take the next step. And Anderson, we don't know what he is. He's going back to square one for many fans.
You're right, Mike. So what about Desmond Ridder? He was taken in the third round.
Bum. I mean, just look, maybe his lot in life was to be a backup, but then it gets back to the coach and the general manager got to work in unison, in concert.
Yeah.
And if that was your evaluation, that there was nobody else to bring in, and they brought in Heinicke as a backstop, but still, neither one could do the job when they were called to.
Tyler Allgeier was a fifth-round pick. He's been money.
Huge value pick, 1,000-yard rusher.
Absolutely. Justin Schaefer in 22, John Fitzpatrick. Never really panned out.
Schaefer never panned out. I thought he'd have you think all Georgia linemen are going to have a shot. It just didn't work.
Didn't work. You jump to 2023. We all fussed. Not me. Bijan, your first pick. Then you go Matthew Bergeron, stud. Then you go Zach Harrison. Mike, he's got a pop this year.
Now, he's put on some size. We talked about it earlier in the week. I mean, this cat is literally he looks like – I said to Chris. Chris was laughing. I didn't mean he plays like Richard Seymour. He looks like Richard Seymour. Now he's got – if he plays like him, then we really nailed to answer your question. But you're right. So far, there's a mixed bag at best.
Clark Phillips, fourth-round pick.
Nice pick. He's likely to be our nickel, you know, right now. It sure sounds like Hughes is going to be starting on opposite AJ Terrell.
All right. DeMarco Helms, we just spoke with him yesterday.
Value pick, seventh round.
So that was your 2023 draft. Five of your guys out of the six picks have contributed in a major way over the last couple of seasons here, right? Over the last two seasons. And then you get to this year, and we'll wait to see what Rook and Braylon Trice and all these guys can do. The point is, for everything that we feel good about with Terry Fontenot, this has to turn. This has to become winning. This has to turn for him from 7-10, Mike, to winning 10 or 12 or whatever it's going to be this year and beyond for long stretches. If this is our window and it's now – you feel like it's opened, and I don't know. Some people say it is. Then that's what this has to be. We can't continue to say that Terry Fontenot's done a really good job when it hasn't resulted in playoffs.
Yeah, man. Like, at the end of the day, and the other thing, you know, you mentioned just strictly looking at the draft picks.
Yeah.
You talked about the Deshaun Watson thing. That's a screw-up. That's a fail. You know, again, some guys don't understand why Matt Ryan had to go. Well, you basically cut him off at the knees. And I think some of our audience doesn't think outside the box. You basically devalued your quarterback in the locker room. He's not the guy anymore. You were ready to move on from him.
You so marginalized him.
And then all you do, but not having plan B or not having enough chips to go toe-to-toe with the Browns, and again, thank God we didn't, because the Deshaun Watson thing is a disaster.
Yeah.
I mean, they're still talking about what he's going to be in Cleveland. But Matt Ryan should never have been traded for anything less than a second-round pick. But he was third-round pick. Now, granted, it was a disaster for Matt up in Indianapolis. Maybe it would have been the same. I don't know. You know, that's one of those parallel universes. What if Arthur Smith gets traction with Matt and all of a sudden things click? We'll never know. But you're right. You did draft Ridder. And then the coaching staff, that's the thing, the general manager's relationship with the coach. Do you think he needs a little more seasoning? You think he needs a little more work this summer? Do those conversations ever occur? Ridder had one series against the Bengals, and they deemed him ready to start in the NFL after just four starts the previous season.
We're just checking the roster.
It's the total package. Now, I mean, unless everybody you talk about is going to point to the other guy,
his fault.
I don't know. I just think you're not being mean-spirited. You're accurate. This is a make-or-break year for Terry Fontenot.
It is.
And I still think that Fontenot, if you love Penix, go get Penix and do something else with your draft, you know, with that money. And go get guaranteed pieces. If you want to make the argument there was nobody worth taking defensively at that eighth pick, okay.
Spend the money in free agency.
Fine. Then go get an edge rusher and go get a corner. Which right now we still don't really have.
We're waiting to see. This hour is brought to you by the Man Cave Store. Up your game at the Man Cave Store this season, guys, at mancavestore.com. It's Dukes and Bell. We're live at Hooters in Buford, Mall of Georgia location, hanging out. We're just talking about the roster, man. You know, all of this is still yet to be determined. But if you're going into this season, and to Mike's point, saying that this ain't a big year for Terry Fontenot, I don't know what you're looking at. It just is, because he's been picking the groceries, and now it's time for this stuff to pay off. And if you feel like you got the right coach, Mike, which everybody says they did, and Raheem Morris and this staff, then it should take the next step. Want to know what you guys think. 404-726-0929. One other thing I do want to bring up, and headlines, by the way, are brought to you by our friends at ATL Live Well. Don't just live, live well. Seeing that yesterday where we have sold out our season tickets, let me say this, Atlanta. That's nice, but are y'all going to show up? That's nice,
right.
But are y'all going to show up? Mike and I have been saying this. Now, I get it. The product has been crap. I understand that. But This whole idea, Mike, that we sold our season tickets out. We got a waiting list now. That's great. Are you going to show up?
Well, this is part of it. I try to explain when you and I do it. You know, you're on the national show on Sunday. We go on shows around the country, and sometimes people ask us what's going on in Atlanta. I said the personal seat license wrecked our fan base. It kept so many folks out, and now I mean people. Now again. You know, we were told the only way you could get into that arena, that stadium in 2016, was you had to have a personal seat license. Now they're cutting all sorts of deals. I don't know. Apparently it's more affordable than it was for me. But anyway, it did keep a lot of people out. And if you had some great seats going all the way back to Fulton County and the Georgia Dome, you couldn't afford $50,000 seats now in club level per seat. So that hurts. So if you do have those seats and you are a working man, and many of our audience certainly is, you got to sell the Cowboy tickets or the Steeler tickets to make back that some of that money.
To recoup.
And that's just the way the cookie crumbled, because the bloodsuckers that were – this isn't Arthur Blank's fault. They just hired the wrong people. Those are absolute bloodsuckers that were in charge of those PSL. Same guys who blew it with San Francisco that had so many people default on their seats. They overpriced the market in Atlanta. They overestimated it. But either way, hindsight's 20/20 now. You got a fascinating football team that we think has a chance to win 10 or 11 games. People, we went from no quarterbacks to having two that can start. Voila, we got sold out.
There's interest. There's interest. I just hope, to Mike's point, it is not interest to sell the tickets for the away teams.
But that is still,
I hope it's interest right. to go support and be there for our team.
Well, that's the other thing. You know, when you sell out the season tickets, how many of those people are scalpers? See, that's another thing. You know, scalpers can buy a personal seat license and then make some money too. There is where we, unfortunately, we live in a world where we're going to hopefully turn it around this year and then take it back. Because, as you know, Carl, we talk about it every time. You have a heritage team come in. There's nothing worse than being surrounded by opposing fans.
Yeah.
And hopefully that's going to change this year.
There's a real good chance, just because of the nature of it, because as the offseason played out, when the schedule came out, first game of the season, Steelers. Steelers going to have a bunch of people there. I'm just telling
that's
you.
Fans, the way, that's it.
They got fans. That fan base is unbelievable.
Well, there's heritage teams. You guys know who they are. The Cowboys, the 49ers, the Packers, the Bears, Steelers are one of the Eagles. They have a fan base that goes back for decades, and, you know, they're going to show.
Yeah. I will say this about the Steeler fans, though, and I learned this, Mike, working with Cordell, and I had to give him credit because I was like, no, but nothing like the Cowboys. He's like, you don't understand. Steeler fans travel.
They're real fans.
They're
real fans.
Cowboy fans just happen to be here and put my Cowboy jersey on. Steeler fans travel, and it's a different level, man. I got to give him credit because he was like, you don't understand. Point is, it may be that way game one, but I just want people to show up when you tell me that we have sold out our season tickets. Let me see.
You brought up the Cowboys. We were joking around yesterday. He'll be here later, our guy Jerome that we like to pick on. He is that quintessential fan that roots for Alabama and the Cowboys and the Lakers and the Yankees. And that's because most Cowboy fans are phonies. But Steeler fans are the real deal. Steeler fans.
Well, everybody wanted to be associated with America's team back in the day.
I got to tell you, my old man used to say it all the time. When you got a guy on your team named Golden Richards, you're not America's team. That was an old wide receiver back in the day, and Hollywood Henderson. My old man, even though he had no skin in the game, always thought the Steelers were more emblematic of America in the 70s than the Dallas Cowboys.
Well, and it's been an argument. Certainly the Cowboys haven't been that recently, but I'm just. And by the way, Cowboys do come in here too, by the way. Steelers come in here. Cowboys come in here.
And that's a chance for some fans to recoup their season tickets. But as we said, and Chris brought this up yesterday, if you keep winning, if we get off to a great start, then all of a sudden, you know what? Now I'm not really as worried about saving, you know, $500 or $600. I'm going to go spend that money and go to the game.
I hope so. I saw that yesterday late, you know, when I got up last night, and I was like, sold out. Is this right?
Right.
And I'm glad.
Hey, I got here in 98.
I'm glad.
Falcons won 14 games, went 14-2. Late the year that it's the SEC championship, right? So Tennessee played Miss State. The Colts were in town. Peyton Manning was a rookie. And probably a third of the fans were Tennessee fans who stuck around to watch Peyton.
Of course.
So, I mean, and that's the year we won the Super Bowl. And that was, of course, years before, Carl, we ever got back-to-back winning seasons. So I think we're at that same kind of crossroads where now so many people want to buy in. That's the thing. We got thousands, you know, literally tens of thousands of people who want to buy in, but they've never been rewarded for their faith.
I agree.
And hopefully that changes this
year. Well, and that's why I said, to start this conversation, the product has been crap. It just has. It hasn't been rewarding to go down there and not see us score, not see us punching in the red zone, not get turnovers, Mike, not get hype for things that are happening on the field. I don't want to get hype for Luda. What's up, Luda? I want to get hype for what's going on the field. I don't want to get hype for T.I. What's up, T.I.? I want to get hype for what's going on the field.
And that's kind of cool. Now, here's the thing. If you've got 70,000 Falcon fans and then Luda rappels from the catwalk, that's really neat. But it's not really cool when there's 30,000 other fans in the building.
It's neater, if that's a word, if you're winning.
Right.
It's funner if you're winning. We will see how that shakes out and how it plays out. Coming up, you're going to hear from Drake London. He stopped by the morning shift. And we'll find out what he thinks about this upcoming season and where he's at as far as training camp is concerned. This hour is brought to you by the Man Cave Store. Up your Man Cave game this season at mancavestore.com. It's Dukes and Bell. Guys up here, Drake London is one of them, Mike. He jumped on with the morning shift, and they got a chance to chop it up with Drake London.
Well, now I feel good because it's hot as hell out here. And I had to take him off. But, Siege for me was like a swag thing coming in the league. And then, you know, I had my little mishaps with them, so I took them off. But I usually wear them for practice because I like to sweat it out and, like, earn my work, you know. That's the whole mindset behind it. But that day just kind of got me. And it's a no-go no more, so I'm done with them.
You said I'm going to have to sweat it out a different kind of way, man. Obviously, you've had a great career so far, but this camp's a little bit different. Coach Morris in the fold. Zach Robinson here is the OC. Just talk to us about some of the changes and maybe some of the things you've noticed so far that are a little bit different this year.
It's a big difference. I think it's a 180 flip, you know. You have fun coming in the building. You have fun working. And you could just see it on all the guys' faces when they come in here, even the coaches. We go in here, we work, we know what we're in here for, and we have fun doing it. So that's all that really matters.
Well, speaking of differences, that what's the difference in the meeting room with Kirk and going over plays and stuff and his leadership as far as the film study part of it?
I mean, this is going to be his 13th year coming up. So a guy who's that vetted, he knows what he's talking about and he knows what he's seen. So to be able to go in there and him take over the meeting room and just really talk to us about ball and what he knows and what he has seen, it is really, really special to us and it helps us grow as a team together.
Okay, now in that same vein, we were talking to Darnell on Saturday night. He talked about the fact that Kirk will throw the ball and hasn't even located him, but he has that trust. Are you guys working with some of the same stuff?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. And that's just Kirk as a player. We'll talk about it, but he knows he's playing for spots. He's not looking, waiting until a guy's open. If you're going to be open, he trusts you. And that's how you play, like, really good ball. And he does just that.
Drake, I've been saying it, you know, for the last couple of years, nobody's better at 50-50 balls in the league than you, man. First of all, how are you able to do that? And then let's talk through kind of developing that repertoire with, you know, with Kirk at the helm of saying, look, man, I can go up and get it with the best of them. I think he probably knows that if he didn't know before. It looks like to me he's been finding out during camp.
First of all, thank you. I think it's just my basketball background. I'm going to go get rebounds and stuff like that, but also I take pride in when the ball's in the air, no matter what, it's going to either be mine or it's going to be incompletion. It's going to be nobody else's. So I take a lot of pride in those situations, and I hope that Kirk sees it, and I think he does, so we're going to keep on building on that.
Speaking of your basketball, you went to USC as a guy playing on a scholarship of both ways. Was it an easy decision to give up basketball and stick solely with football? I mean, obviously it worked, but was it an easy decision?
It was a hard one. You know, I was actually sitting outside of the basketball court talking to my parents about it when I was going to make the decision. It wasn't an easy one because basketball was one of my first loves, and that was a sport that I grew up really, really playing. But again, like you said, it all worked out for a reason, and I cannot be mad at it.
Out here, when you come to camp, you know, I know that it's in baseball, other sports like basketball, there's things you're individually working on. But when you come to camp, is there something in this camp that you're just trying to, you know, tweak a little bit better to get a little bit better at?
I think everything, honestly. I think I'm working on more growing every day as a player than worrying about what I did that day. I think I'm just trying to work on myself so when it becomes game time, then I'm ready for that. Not so much ready for every day of practice trying to do everything right. I'm trying to work on myself. So I think just growth as a player is what I'm working on this year.
I don't know how much Olympics you've watched, but one of the funny topics that keeps coming up with a lot of players is if you were given 4 years to train, what would be your sport? I think for you it's pretty easy. You'd be team, you know, Team USA men's basketball. Is there anything else that sticks out of you? 4 years to train, though, without having to go to work, man, there's probably a lot of things Drake London can do.
Yeah, I would probably have to say basketball for sure. But if not, shoot, I don't know. There's so many games now. Like there's like skateboarding and a bunch of crazy stuff.
Breakdancing.
Yeah, yeah. If you give me 4 years, I may do breakdancing. I don't know.
All right, well, we've been asking everyone, and I already know your answer because it seems to be an overwhelming answer. But the Guardian caps, you all have to wear them this year. There's a, you know, I think you can wear them in a game. Would you ever even consider wearing a Guardian cap in a game?
No, and they're trash. We already have a thing of our generation that this sport is soft and that our generation is soft. And now that they're adding this, and then at the same time, if we're conditioning our own head to hit with these guardian caps, we choose not to wear them in the game, that first hit's going to be a little bit harder. So I feel that that's not really a safety precaution for us when it comes to the game. We know what we signed up for, so why wear this? I know you're trying to protect our heads, but we know what we signed up for. That's what I got to say.
That's a phenomenal point. All right, so one of the other questions we've been asking a lot of guys we've been hanging out with, Arnold Ebiketie, Jake Matthews, obviously Darnell Saturday night. Is there something you have to pack for training camp? I think Arnold said, you know, PS5, obviously, he's like, that's where I get my Netflix. Jake's was a foam roller. I mean, is there anything that, you know, other than clothes that when you're packing, man, you spend 3 or 4 weeks away from family that you just have to have in the bag?
I'm big on white noise when I sleep, so I got to have my box fan. My white box fan. That's mandatory.
That's the best answer I've heard yet.
Words of Drake London, Mike, and he said this generation, talking about the guys that play now, already have this reputation of the league is soft. He didn't like the caps, man.
Man, well, we were just talking about seeing old two-a-days, you know, you in Texas, me in Florida, and now you watch the Falcons. It's not their fault. It's what the CBA has been negotiated to be, where you wonder what guys can't tackle because they don't practice like they used to. But these are the pads, guys. These are sleeves with these padded little waffle things that you see on the helmets when you're watching all the highlights. If you watch NFL, Good Morning Football. But it's funny. Basically, Drake's saying, yeah, I'll take a concussion instead of looking like a wussy.
That's exactly what he said.
So, I mean, this was the same thing. You and I, we survived our childhood by never wearing helmets riding bicycles. But obviously, there's a danger out there for kids who can't figure out how to not crash a bicycle, so they got to make everybody wear helmets. But a lot of players out there just will not. I wonder, Steve Tasker wore that oversized helmet. There was a 49ers lineman back in the day that wore it. But that's about it. Nobody wants to look like Kazoo from Flintstones.
Well, I think there's this, you know, this perception that goes along with it. The reality is it is about protection. You don't realize, all right, let's say you start playing, and I'll use my example. At 6 years old, helmets were too big, pads were too big. How many times did you bang heads with your teammate at practice that you didn't even think about it, right? So you do that at 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. You get to high school, you do it. I'm talking about that contact with your head that you don't even remember because it was just part of practice. All those headshots might add up. Then you get to college, and you're doing the same thing. And then all of a sudden, you're in the NFL. Mike, that's 15 years of headshots that you've been hitting guys accidentally or coincidentally. And all of a sudden now you're like, man, at 35, I don't feel good. There's a reason why they're wearing these damn protective helmets.
Remember that study they did at North Carolina where they put the sensors on all the players in practice? And they were talking about just in one day of practice, to your point. You know, dozens and dozens of the contact. But this
especially
is, you know,
guys up front.
Right. This is where I would think if ever, you know, there would be a man law code that you could break would be in the trenches. Because, you know, you're 6-7 inches across, pow, and there's immediate contact. Maybe at some point they'll come up with a better mousetrap. Nobody's come up with a balance of safety and style, if we're honest, that these guys want to go wear.
Yeah.
Now, when you watch Falcons practice, for what it's worth, who is it? The right tackle doesn't have the – he's got one of those approved helmets. So you'll see him not wearing the padding, but that's one of those helmets that's been approved by the NFL. It's one of those different ones that's been on the market now the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Caleb McGarry's not wearing the pads. He's got a helmet that meets the standards.
I know they're trying out a bunch of different things. And listen, science is beautiful when it's able to help us and be productive for the human race in a way that, you know, hey, we're going to create a game that's more safe. But at the end of the day, seeing all these guys run around with these helmets on, it is weird. That was Drake London talking about that.
Right.
He also was just talking about where he's at and his basketball background, which explains, Mike, again, for those who don't know, all those balls that Desmond Ridder threw up last year, he was able to go up and get.
Yeah, man. As we said yesterday, it was earlier in the week, it's tough to play wide receiver and carry a stepladder because, you know, you're getting off the line. It's hard to get the push. But, yeah, man, look, this guy's a tremendous athlete. I just think with Kirk Cousins, you're going to have a reliable delivery system. And we've already seen Penix look great. So, look, nobody wants to crap on their former teammates, especially Drake London, who had a good relationship with Desmond Ridder, but it is what it is.
Sure.
It wasn't any good. And Mariota's a bum, too. It is what it is. Now you got two guys that can do the job. I can't wait to see Penix. I think the fans are going to be going nuts when they see Penix in preseason. The thing is, you're going to have to wait to see a Kirk Cousins. He'll be in those controlled environments of the scrimmage, and that'll maybe create a little controversy amongst the fans. But as you and I said the other day, it's not like the players are going to be mutinying the way that Florio tried to describe it in Pro Football Talk.
Yeah.
They know who the pecking order is. They know that Cousins is the man.
Well, and Arthur Blank said it yesterday. Kirk Cousins, quote, is our franchise quarterback. He is our starting quarterback.
We told Kurt we let him know we're going to draft the quarterback. He was under the impression it was the third or the fourth round. I'm not a meddler. Inferring that I'm a meddler, Dukes and Bell.
I'm sorry.
Arthur Blank, and I'm not a meddler.
No, I know, Arthur. I just, every time you say that, like, right. I'm aware of these decisions. Are you aware, or are you like, this is what we should be doing? Are you doing that? That's what I wonder.
By the way, speaking of the Falcons and, you know, the moves and the money, we don't have any cap space right now. You have to restructure a couple of veterans to make that work. They don't want to go down that road again. We just paid the price back in 21 and 22. But, you know, it's funny. A listener of ours, there was a video, and it shows Drake London practicing, just catching a ball in the corner. So there's no corner on him. And the listener wrote, here is Drake London going up against Falcons CB2. In other words, we don't really have another cornerback opposite A.J. Terrell. Mike Hughes is the guy that's, you know, penciled in right now. Clark Phillips is in the nickel. Still curious to see if they're going to go make a move before the before maybe they'll see something in the preseason games that makes them have to go get somebody else in there. But they're still swearing by this cornerback room right now.
I think they want a couple of options. One, Clark Phillips, right. With just his size. He's not a big guy, just from a physical stature. And then you get a bigger guy in Hughes. And so, Mike, it gives you options to still have the playmaking ability of Phillips, but maybe if you need to go up against a bigger receiver. Guys, you guys know how big Mike Evans is?
Right.
He's 6'5", okay, about 250. There's a reason why Mike Evans is able to get corners off of him, okay? So when you see him line up and there's a smaller corner, I don't have to be perfect with the football. Mike, I can just throw it out there. He's going to make a play. So when you're going up against those kinds of wide receivers, I have to have options. We've drafted guys in the past like that who were big, lengthy, you know, but they just didn't pan out. So I think when you go up against particular teams, certain teams, you want to have those kinds of options. And that's why I think they're playing both of these guys. I don't know if anybody is taking the advantage of being the number one or number two corner right now.
Right. When we saw those Saints the final week of the season, when they ran it up on us, when, you know, Jameis Winston freelanced that last touchdown, it was Chris Olave that was matched up at times against again, you know, he caught three balls, but he did grab a touchdown. He was going up against their best receivers. There was a guy that, you know, we've seen before, Taysom Hill, doing his usual stuff, the usual suspects, but it was a dude named Rashid Shaheed, you know, and you're like, who the heck is that guy? So he's 6 feet tall, 180. So that's still even a lot taller than what you're dealing with Clark Phillips. To your point about the mismatches, and maybe he's better suited to the nickel.
Well, these coordinators now, Mike, this is like, whether it's Sean McVay, pick your guy. It doesn't matter. They watch film all before the week, but mostly leading up to your game, and they're going, who are we going to pick on?
Right. That's it. Looking for the mismatch.
And you know how you pick on guys? Motion. I'm going to motion guys and move guys around, and all of a sudden I create a mismatch, and now – We're gonna, and if your quarterback's good enough, which is what the situation is, then you're gonna get beat up. And I think, you know, when you start talking about these corners, it is a concern. I know you and Chris have talked about it all offseason. And I said, hopefully they'll figure it out. Maybe we go sign a guy, but that is my concern: is just going up against more talented wide receivers and coordinators who have the wherewithal to do those things. Not everybody in the league, they're trying to, but they're not all great at it.
Well, it's also, and just real quick as we wrap it up, it's the interconnectivity. The front is going to help take care of the back. It's that philosophy. Dimitrov thought
that's up here. Drake London is one of them, Mike. He jumped on with the morning shift, and they got a chance to chop it up with Drake London.
Well, now I feel good because it's hot as hell out here, and I had to take him off. But nah, Siege for me was like a swag thing, coming in the league, and then, you know, I had my little mishaps with them, so I took them off. But I usually wear them for practice because I like to sweat it out and like earn my work, you know. That's the whole mindset behind it. But that day just kind of got me, and it's a no-go no more, so I'm done with them.
You said I'm going to have to sweat it out a different kind of way, man. Obviously, you've had a great career so far, but this camp's a little bit different. Coach Morris in the fold. Zach Robinson here is the OC. Just talk to us about some of the changes and maybe some of the things you've noticed so far that are a little bit different this year.
It's a big difference. I think it's a 180 flip, you know. You have fun coming in the building. You have fun working. And you could just see it on all the guys' faces when they come in here, even the coaches. We go in here, we work, we know what we're in here for, and we have fun doing it. So that's all that really matters.
Well, speaking of differences, what's the difference in the meeting room with Kirk and going over plays and stuff and his leadership as far as the film study part of it?
I mean, this is going to be his 13th year coming up. So a guy who's that vetted, he knows what he's talking about and he knows what he's seen. So to be able to go in there and him take over the meeting room and just really talk to us about ball and what he knows and what he has seen, it is really, really special to us, and it helps us grow as a team together.
Okay, now in that same vein, we were talking to Darnell on Saturday night. He talked about the fact that Kirk will throw the ball and hasn't even located him, but he has that trust. Are you guys working with some of the same stuff?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. And that's just Kirk as a player. We'll talk about it, but he knows he's playing for spots. He's not looking, waiting until a guy's open. If you're going to be open, he trusts you. And that's how you play, like, really good ball. And he does just that.
Drake, I've been saying it, you know, for the last couple of years, nobody's better at 50-50 balls in the league than you, man. First of all, how are you able to do that? And then let's talk through kind of developing that repertoire with, you know, with Kirk at the helm of saying, look, man, I can go up and get it with the best of them. I think he probably knows that if he didn't know before. It looks like to me he's been finding out during camp.
First of all, thank you. I think it's just my basketball background. I'm going to go get rebounds and stuff like that, but also I take pride in when the ball's in the air, no matter what, it's going to either be mine or it's going to be incompletion. It's going to be nobody else's. So I take a lot of pride in those situations, and I hope that Kirk sees it, and I think he does, so we're going to keep on building on that.
Speaking of your basketball, you went to USC as a guy playing on a scholarship of both ways. Was it an easy decision to give up basketball and stick solely with football? I mean, obviously it worked, but was it an easy decision?
It was a hard one. You know, I was actually sitting outside of the basketball court talking to my parents about it when I was going to make the decision. It wasn't an easy one because basketball was one of my first loves, and that was a sport that I grew up really, really playing. But again, like you said, it all worked out for a reason, and I cannot be mad at it.
Out here, when you come to camp, you know, I know that it's in baseball, other sports like basketball, there's things you're individually working on. But when you come to camp, is there something in this camp that you're just trying to, you know, tweak a little bit better to get a little bit better at?
I think everything, honestly. I think I'm working on more growing every day as a player than worrying about what I did that day. I think I'm just trying to work on myself so when it becomes game time, then I'm ready for that. Not so much ready for every day of practice trying to do everything right. I'm trying to work on myself. So I think just growth as a player is what I'm working on this year.
I don't know how much Olympics you've watched, but one of the funny topics that keeps coming up with a lot of players is if you were given 4 years to train, what would be your sport? I think for you it's pretty easy. You'd be team, you know, Team USA men's basketball. Is there anything else that sticks out of you? 4 years to train, though, without having to go to work, man, there's probably a lot of things Drake London can do.
Yeah, I would probably have to say basketball for sure. But if not, shoot, I don't know. There's so many games now. Like there's like skateboarding and a bunch of crazy stuff.
Breakdancing.
Yeah, yeah. If you give me 4 years, I may do breakdancing. I don't know.
All right, well, we've been asking everyone, and I already know your answer because it seems to be an overwhelming answer. But the Guardian caps, you all have to wear them this year. There's a, you know, I think you can wear them in a game. Would you ever even consider wearing a Guardian cap in a game?
No, and they're trash. We already have a thing of our generation that this sport is soft and that our generation is soft. And now that they're adding this, and then at the same time, if we're conditioning our own head to hit with these Guardian caps, we choose not to wear them in the game, that first hit's going to be a little bit harder. So I feel that that's not really a safety precaution for us when it comes to the game. We know what we signed up for, so why wear this? I know you're trying to protect our heads, but we know what we signed up for. That's what I gotta say.
That's a phenomenal point. All right, so one of the other questions we've been asking a lot of guys we've been hanging out with, Arnold Ebiketie, Jake Matthews, obviously Darnell Saturday night. Is there something you have to pack for training camp? I think Arnold said, you know, PS5, obviously he's like, that's where I get my Netflix. Jake's was a foam roller. I mean, is there anything that, you know, other than clothes that when you're packing, man, you spend 3 or 4 weeks away from family that you just have to have in the bag?
I'm big on white noise when I sleep, so I got to have my box fan, my white box fan. That's mandatory.
That's the best answer I've heard yet.
Words of Drake London, Mike, and he said this generation, talking about the guys that play now, already have this reputation of the league is soft. He doesn't like the caps, man.
Man, well, we were just talking about seeing old two-a-days, you know, you in Texas, me in Florida, and now you watch the Falcons. It's not their fault. It's what the CBA has been negotiated to be, where you wonder what guys can't tackle because they don't practice like they used to. But these are the pads, guys. These are sleeves with these padded little waffle things that you see on the helmets when you're watching all the highlights or you watch NFL Good Morning Football. But it's funny. Basically, Drake's saying, yeah, I'll take a concussion instead of looking like a wussy.
That's exactly what he said.
So, I mean, this was the same thing. You and I, we survived our childhood by never wearing helmets riding bicycles. But obviously there's a danger out there for kids who can't figure out how to not crash a bicycle, so they got to make everybody wear helmets. But a lot of players out there just will not. I wonder, Steve Tasker wore that oversized helmet. There was a 49ers lineman back in the day that wore it. But that's about it. Nobody wants to look like Kazoo from Flintstones.
Well, I think there's this, you know, this perception that goes along with it. The reality is it is about protection. You don't realize, all right, let's say you start playing, and I'll use my example. At 6 years old, helmets were too big, pads were too big. How many times did you bang heads with your teammate at practice that you didn't even think about it, right? So you do that at 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. You get to high school, you do it. I'm talking about that contact with your head that you don't even remember because it was just part of practice. All those headshots might add up. Then you get to college, and you're doing the same thing. And then all of a sudden, you're in the NFL. Mike, that's 15 years of headshots that you've been hitting guys accidentally or coincidentally. And all of a sudden now you're like, man, at 35, I don't feel good. There's a reason why they're wearing these damn protective helmets.
Remember that study they did at North Carolina where they put the sensors on all the players in practice? And they were talking about just in one day of practice, to your point. You know, dozens and dozens of the contact. But this
especially
is, you know,
guys up front.
Right. This is where I would think if ever, you know, there'd be a man law code that you could break would be in the trenches. Because, you know, you're 6-7 inches across, pow, and there's immediate contact. Maybe at some point they'll come up with a better mousetrap. Nobody's come up with a balance of safety and style, if we're honest, that these guys want to go wear.
Yeah.
Now, when you watch Falcons practice, for what it's worth, who is it? The right tackle doesn't have the – he's got one of those approved helmets. So you'll see him not wearing the padding, but that's one of those helmets that's been approved by the NFL. It's one of those different ones that's been on the market now the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Caleb McGarry's not wearing the pads. He's got a helmet that meets the standards.
I know they're trying out a bunch of different things. And listen, science is beautiful when it's able to help us and be productive for the human race in a way that, you know, hey, we're going to create a game that's more safe. But at the end of the day, seeing all these guys run around with these helmets on, it is weird. That was Drake London talking about that.
Right.
He also was just talking about where he's at and his basketball background, which explains, Mike, again, for those who don't know, all those balls that Desmond Ridder threw up last year, he was able to go up and get.
Yeah, man. As we said yesterday, it was earlier in the week, it's tough to play wide receiver and carry a stepladder because, you know, you're getting off the line. It's hard to get the push. But, yeah, man, look, this guy's a tremendous athlete. I just think with Kirk Cousins, you're going to have a reliable delivery system. And we've already seen Penix look great. So, look, nobody wants to crap on their former teammates, especially Drake London, who had a good relationship with Desmond Ridder, but it is what it is.
Sure.
It wasn't any good. And Mariota's a bum, too. It is what it is. Now you got two guys that can do the job. I can't wait to see Penix. I think the fans are going to be going nuts when they see Penix in preseason. The thing is, you're going to have to wait to see a Kirk Cousins. He'll be in those controlled environments of the scrimmage, and that'll maybe create a little controversy amongst the fans. But as you and I said the other day, it's not like the players are going to be mutinying the way that Florio tried to describe it in Pro Football Talk.
Yeah.
They know who the pecking order is. They know that Cousins is the man.
Well, and Arthur Blank said it yesterday. Kirk Cousins, quote, is our franchise quarterback. He is our starting quarterback.
We told Kurt we let him know we're going to draft a quarterback. He was under the impression it was the third or the fourth round. So, I'm not a meddler. Stop inferring that I'm a meddler, Dukes and Bell.
I'm sorry.
I'm Arthur Blank, and I'm not a meddler.
No, I know, Arthur. I just, every time you say that, like, I'm aware of these decisions. Are you aware, or are you like, this is what we should be doing? Are you doing that? That's what I wonder.
By the way, speaking of the Falcons and, you know, the moves and the money, we don't have any cap space right now. You have to restructure a couple of veterans to make that work. They don't want to go down that road again. We just paid the price back in 21 and 22. But, you know, it's funny. A listener of ours, there was a video and it shows Drake London practicing, just catching a ball in the corner. So there's no corner on him. And the listener wrote, here is Drake London going up against Falcons CB2. In other words, we don't really have another cornerback opposite A.J. Terrell. Mike Hughes is the guy that's, you know, penciled in right now. Clark Phillips is in the nickel. Still curious to see if they're going to go make a move before the before maybe they'll see something in the preseason games that makes them have to go get somebody else in there. But they're still swearing by this cornerback room right now.
I think they want a couple of options. One, Clark Phillips,
right.
With just his size. He's not a big guy, just from a physical stature. And then you get a bigger guy in Hughes. And so, Mike, it gives you options to still have the playmaking ability of Phillips, but maybe if you need to go up against a bigger receiver. Guys, you guys know how big Mike Evans is?
Right.
He's 6'5", okay? About 250. There's a reason why Mike Evans is able to get corners off of him, okay? So when you see him line up and there's a smaller corner, I don't have to be perfect with the football. Mike, I can just throw it out there. He's going to make a play. So when you're going against those kinds of wide receivers, I have to have options. We've drafted guys in the past like that who were big, lengthy, you know, but they just didn't pan out. So I think when you go up against particular teams, certain teams, you want to have those kinds of options. And, and that's why I think they're playing both of these guys. I don't know if anybody is taking the advantage of being the number one or number two corner right now.
Right. When we saw those Saints the final week of the season when they ran it up on us, when you know, Jameis Winston freelanced that last touchdown, it was Chris Olave that was matched up at times against again, you know, he caught three balls, but he did grab a touchdown. He was going up against their best receivers. There was a guy that you know, we've seen before, Taysom Hill, doing his usual stuff, the usual suspects, but it was a dude named Rashid Shaheed, you know, and you're like, who the heck is that guy? So that's, well, he's 6 feet tall, 180. So that's still even a lot taller than what you're dealing with Clark Phillips. To your point about the mismatches, and maybe he's better suited to the nickel.
Well, these coordinators now, Mike, this is like, whether it's Sean McVay, pick your guy. It doesn't matter. They watch film all before the week, but mostly leading up to your game, and they're going, who are we going to pick on?
Right. That's it. Looking for the mismatch.
And you know how you pick on guys? Motion. I'm going to motion guys and move guys around, and all of a sudden I create a mismatch, and now – We're gonna, and if your quarterback's good enough, which is what the situation is, then you're gonna get beat up. And I think, you know, when you start talking about these corners, it is a concern. I know you and Chris have talked about it all offseason. I said, hopefully they'll figure it out. Maybe we go sign a guy, but that is my concern: is just going up against more talented wide receivers and coordinators who have the wherewithal to do those things. Not everybody in the league, they're trying to, but they're not all great at it.
Well, it's also, and just real quick as we wrap it up, it's the interconnectivity. The front is going to help take care of the back. It's that philosophy. Dimitrov thought you go get the best corners and you figure out the edge rushers later. Hopefully we're going to get the edge rushers, going to put some heat on the quarterback, because you can't let those guys sit back there and just get picked apart. That's why it was interesting that Steve Wilks, the former head coach of the Panthers and Arizona Cardinals, has been in practice, because he is described as, I think, a blitz-happy guy. Mm-hmm. Probably coaches the defensive blitzes more than almost anybody. That's something I think if you're like Falcon fans, let's send the heat, man. Bring the kitchen, because I'd rather, what's this phrase? Come home with your shield or on it. I'd rather see us die that way than get picked apart because we can't get any heat on the quarterback.
404-726-0929. It is our text line. You can hit us up. We're live at Hooters, man. Come on through. Mall of Georgia location.
Hey, look at this. It's another one of those days. We got a bunch of nice whips out there. See somebody's rides out here? Was that your three-wheeler? Do you bring yours today?
No. That is somebody else's there, but it's nice.
So today, guys, we've got one of the brand-new Broncos. We got a Porsche. We got an Alfa Romeo. We got some nice rides over here, man. It's really become the Dukes and Bell Residency and Car Show here at the Hooters Mall of Georgia.
And it makes it a little bit more interesting because you can actually look out the glass and see.
Right. I mean, and, hey, guys, give it up for Kyle Pitts from the Falcons Raider. Kyle, say hi to the crowd.
There you go. Hey, crowd.
It's one of our loyalists, one of our good guys who does bear a significant resemblance to Kyle Pitts.
All right, we're coming back. NFL Blitz is on the way. The latest on what's going on around the National Football League. When we come back on Dukes and Bell.